The general introduction over, we now present the 24 slokas of the Purusha Suktam as slow chants. After the recitation of every stanza, there follows the meaning in English. In some case, the meaning of the stanza is supplemented with additional comments that hopefully offer further insight. We must point out that the English rendering presented by us is not a verbatim translation, since such a translation would not quite serve our present needs. Rather, it is a paraphrase of the essential content of each stanza, attempting to retain at the same time, as closely as possible, the flavor and the spirit of the Sanskrit original. Many books have been consulted in order to prepare what follows, and it is hoped that there are no serious lapses, errors, or shortcomings. On now to the slow chants, starting with an invocation. By the way, at the end of the recitation of the 24 stanzas, the invocation is repeated again, as is the usual custom.
Om Tathayo Ravruni Mahe Gatoy Yajnaya Gatoy Yajnapataye Daivi Swastirastu Naha Swastir Manushebhyaha Urdhvam Jigadu Bheshajam Shanno Astu Dvipade Shanchadushpade Om Shanti Shanti
We pray to and worship the Supreme One for the welfare of all. Free from miseries, may we all sing the glory of sacrifice, Yajna, through which we seek to propitiate the Lord, who is Himself the embodiment of sacrifice. May we receive divine protection, and may everyone everywhere be well and healthy. May medicinal herbs possessing high potency grow in plenty. May all humans and animals too be safe and sound. Finally, may peace prevail at all the three levels of human existence, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual.
Om Sahasrashirusha Sahasrakshas Sahasrapad Sabhumim Vishwato Vritva Atyadishtat Dashangulam.
Purusha, the Supreme One, pervades the entire manifest universe, cognizing through all minds, seeing through all eyes, and working through all limbs. He is everywhere. Where is He not? Enveloping the universe from all sides, He also transcends it into the infinite, intangible, and eternal realm of the Absolute.
By the way, once a devotee speaking in the Divine Presence and just before a discourse discussed the question, "Who is God?" When it was Swami's turn to speak, he said that such questions arise from ignorance because there is only God and nothing but God. Swami added, "People ask if there is only God, then why don't we see Him?" You do not see God because you have curious notions about how God ought to look. God is in everything, including all human beings. When the Vedas say that He has 1,000 eyes, it does not mean that God is an entity with 1,000 eyes. In fact, a form with 1,000 eyes would look very grotesque. What it means is that God sees through all eyes because He resides in all. Then people may ask in that case, why do the Vedas speak of only 1,000 eyes? The answer is simple. In those distant days, the population of the world was small and people thought in terms of thousands and not millions as we now do. If those rishis were to describe God in that language today, they would speak of billions and not thousands. That is what Swami said in essence. And that observation of Swami ought to make it very clear how we ought to interpret this opening stanza.
Purusha evedagum sarvam yat bhutam yat jabhavyam utamrutatvasyeshanaha yadannena tirohati.
Purusha is what is in the universe, what has been and what will be. He spans all three periods of time, but being eternal, he is also beyond time. Thus, as the Absolute and the Infinite One, he is never diminished or drained by his physical manifestations. Creation cannot ever deplete him.
The important point about this verse is that though the Supreme Lord is absolute, he does project himself into lower dimensions for the sake of creating a universe. However, as already pointed out in the general introduction, this projection does not in any way diminish him. When water evaporates from the sea, the quantity of water in the sea does get diminished, though we are not able to see this decrease since that sea is vast. But in the case of the Lord, he is infinite and not finite like the oceans on earth. So even in principle, he cannot ever be diminished by any process whatsoever.
Etavanasya mahima atojyaya gustya purushaha padosya vishvabhutani tripadasyamritam divi.
He fills the whole of the manifest universe with his glory and splendor, and yet all this wonder is but an infinitesimal speck of his true power and glory. This vast ocean of incomparable glory of the Immortal One lies hidden and is beyond normal human cognition.
Let us hear how Lord Krishna explains this to Arjuna. Lord Krishna dwells on this topic first in chapter 7 and then again in chapter 15. In chapter 7 he says, "Nature is my lower and material aspect, but know thou, O Mahabhau, that distinct from this is my other and higher aspect, Jiva, the life principle by which this entire universe is sustained. Know ye that these two aspects are the wombs of all beings, and that I ultimately am the one from whom the entire universe evolves and into whom the universe finally dissolves." These are the two aspects of the Purusha in this world, associated respectively with the perishable and the imperishable. All the perishable aspects belong to the former, and the eternal aspects belong to the latter. But distinct from these and above them both is the Supreme Purusha, the Purushottaman, called the Universal Self, who, as the indestructible Lord, pervades the three worlds and sustains them. Let us now hear the next two stanzas before considering the deeper implications.
Tripadurbha udait purushah padosyeha bhavat punah tato vishyam vyakramat sachana nachane abhi.
Eternal he is, but he is also imminent in all that exists, both sentient and insentient, in the manifest but transient universe, and the manifested part being finite despite its bewildering diverse forms, constitutes but an inconspicuous fraction of his totality.
Tasmat virata jayata virajo adhipurushah sajato atyarichyata pascat bhumimatho purah.
From him, the supreme Purusha, emerged the physical universe or cosmos, which is nothing but a projection of the Lord, suffused with his glory, power and potency. In his appearance as the Lord of the cosmos, he is known as Virata Purusha, or simply as Virata. It is from this Virata that gradually all things appeared, both insentient and sentient.
The last two stanzas bring out what has already been pointed out in the general introduction, namely that the Supreme One, who exists all by himself as the eternal absolute, materially is immanent in things in the manifested universe and also transcends this immanence by having a subtle presence in the life force and the mind. Well, it is illuminating to hear what Lord Krishna has to say on this subject. The Lord says, "Whatsoever is the seed of all beings, O Arjuna, that I am. There is no being moving or immobile that can exist without me. There is no end to my divine powers, and what I have described is but a trifling sample. Whatever is glorious, beautiful and mighty, know that all such has issued from a minuscule part of my infinite and limitless splendor." Once again, let us hear the next two stanzas together.
Yat purushena havisha deva yajnamatanvata vasanto asya sita rajyam grishma itma sharad thavihi.
But how did things slowly evolve out of Virata? Through a sequence of steps. First came the spirits or the deities, the devas. Desirous of advancing further the cause of evolution, the devas performed a sacrifice. But sacrificial rites or yajna call for offerings to be made, and objects material were yet to be created. The devas therefore made subtle offerings via the various seasons, treating the spring as ghee or clarified butter that is poured into the sacred fire, the summer as faggots used for keeping the sacred fire going, and autumn as the sacred rice that is offered to the fire in the later stages of the yajna.
Saptasya sanparidhayah trisapta samidha krita devayat yajnam tandvana abhadnan purusham pashum.
For the sacred and subtle yajna that they performed, the devas used the seven Vedic meters as the seven boundaries of their subtle altar. And to the sacred subtle fire burning in this altar, they offered 21 types of subtle faggots, since the trees that provide faggots had not yet come into existence. Finally, as a climax, Virat himself was made an offering in order to aid material evolution.
We now come to a crucial part of the Purusha Suktam, where the concept of yajna finds mention. Later in the overview that would follow after the recitation is complete, we shall discuss the entire question of yajna in some detail. Here we note just a few points. First is that Though the word yajna is often interpreted as sacrifice, it also means an offering. Next, careful thought must precede every action, especially one directed for a specific goal. And that thought process would often involve a contemplation of the mental readiness needed for undertaking an action. Let us say a country is faced with severe drought. The leaders then have to take suitable action, and that might call for austere living on the part of all citizens. In turn, this would require a firm resolve from everyone for tightening of their belt. In short, careful planning is needed, especially before undertaking good action, since one wants the outcome to be satisfactory. Well, if one wants to perform good actions, one must remember that performing good actions also calls for a readiness to sacrifice. And implicit in all this is the truth that happiness flows only from sacrifice and pain and nothing else. This is a constant undercurrent of the Vedas, and Swami often underscores this. Have we not heard Swami say that ananda or bliss can come only from misery, joy cannot give rise to joy? We shall hear the next two stanzas together before reflecting on them.
Tam yajnam varhishi prokshanna purusham jatam agratah tena deva ayajanta sadhya rushayaschaye.
Even as Virata allowed himself to become a sacrificial offering so that material diversity may emerge, subtle holy water was sprinkled on Virata by way of purifying the offering. Thus did the Devas and the Rishis perform the yajna that spurred evolution.
Tasmad yajna sarvahutah sambhradam vrishadajyam pasho gustagustakreva yavyanane aranyan gramyaschaye.
After Virata made the ultimate sacrifice, allowing himself to be offered to the sacred and subtle fire, there emerged air and food that sustained life, as also animals, both wild and domestic.
There are some important points being made here. The first is that if an individual wants some benefit, then that individual has to work for it. In other words, there is no such thing as a free lunch. For example, if a person is very fat, can he shed weight if someone else works out for him in the gym? There cannot be any proxy in such matters. One just cannot earn rewards, honestly that is, by riding back on the sacrifice made by someone else. Next, good alone begets good. Evil never can and never will. This point is very important in today's society, where violence is often seen as the only answer to violence. As Swami puts it, can you plant a neem seed and expect a mango tree that yields sweet fruits?
Tasmat yajnat sarvahutah ruchas samani jagnire chandagum se jagnire tasmat yajus tasmat jayata.
Because an aspect of the Supreme One itself was sacrificed, there also emerged, besides things material, the sacred scriptures consisting of chants that constitute the Rig, the Sama and the Yajurvedas.
We begin with what Lord Krishna says in the 9th chapter. Lord Krishna says, I am the ordainer of this world, as also its mother, father and grandfather. I am that which is to be known, the purifier, the syllable Om, and also the Rig, the Sama, and the Yajurvedas. There are some beautiful points implicit in this stanza, which is connected with knowledge and the spread of knowledge. First is that whatever knowledge that man has acquired is actually a gift of God. Secondly, knowledge is not something that man invents. It is already there and man merely discovers it. For example, the law of gravitation that every schoolboy knows was not brought into existence by Newton. That law has been in operation since our universe came into existence about 14 billion years ago. Newton merely discovered it, just as Columbus discovered America that was already there. Second, God is the source of all knowledge, especially scriptural. Lord Krishna makes this abundantly clear when he says in the 10th chapter of the sciences, I am the science of scriptural knowledge. Third is that knowledge is one of the few things that one can give away and still not suffer any loss. For example, if one has wealth and a part of it is given away, then one's position does decrease. Not so with knowledge. This point is very important in today's world, especially in the context of the so-called intellectual property and all that. We shall consider that later when we come to the overview.
Tasmadashva ajayanta ekecho bhayatadaha gavoha jagniretasmad tasmad jata ajavayaha.
Animals of various types and with various physical forms also evolved, including those with just one row of teeth, like the horse, and those with two rows, like the donkey and the goat.
Lord Krishna makes this explicit in the Gita when he says, I am the source of all, and from me everything flows. What it means is that, as many forms slowly evolved, he it was who not only made it all happen, but was also in each and every one of those diverse forms. God is indeed the primordial seed from which came everything. Once in the intimate atmosphere that is a hallmark of the famous sessions at the Trai Vrindavan, which Swami holds with students, a specially invited guest asked, Swami, lot of people talk of the chicken and the egg problem. Actually, which came first, the egg or the chicken? Swami gave a one-word answer, the egg. He then went on to give a brief description of evolution as contained in the Vedas. In a sense, these few stanzas say it all, though in a poetic language. Let us take the next two stanzas together before trying to understand what they mean. By the way, these two stanzas are very important.
Yat purusham vyadhatuh kadidha vyakalpayan mukham kimasya kau bahu ka purupada vuchyede.
What became of the various parts of Virata when he was sacrificed thus? Which section of humanity emerged from his head, hands, thighs, and feet?
Brahmano sya mukhamasi bahura janya kritaha urutadasya yatvaishyaha patryagum chotro ajayata.
Since the head represents intelligence, from the head of Virata emerged the Brahmins or the intelligentsia. From the arms came the Kshatriyas or the warrior class. Likewise, from the thighs emerge the Vaishyas or the trading community, while from the feet of Virata came the Shudras or the members of the service sector.
Basically, these two stanzas describe diversity in human society. And though the description is actually based on human aptitudes, because the caste terminology is used to describe the stratification of society, social activists are extremely critical of not only the Vedas, but even more so of Lord Krishna, because in the Gita, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that it is he who has ordained the Varna system. For these activists, the Varna system means the caste system. And since there has been much abuse in the caste system, naturally, the activists are very quick to condemn Lord Krishna, the Gita and the Vedas as evil, etc. All such condemnation arises from total ignorance on the one hand of what exactly the Vedas actually meant and lack of understanding on the other of the nature of diversity in creation. The activists' rejection of the Varna system is to use a popular phrase like throwing the baby with the bathwater. The Varna system needs some detailed comments that we reserve for the overview that is to come later. For the present, we merely note that these stanzas are not a glorification or justification of the evils of the caste system. Rather, they offer an allegorical description of the diversity of human aptitudes and tendencies and how they manifest in society. Once again, we shall listen to two more stanzas before we take up the interpretation.
Chandrama manaso jatah chaksho suryo ajayata mukhadindras jagnischa prana dvayurajayata.
From the Virata also came forth the sun and the moon, the sun from the eyes and the moon from the mind, and in this manner came also the elements fire and wind, fire from his face and wind from his breath.
Nabhya asidhantariksham chishno dyo samavartata padbhyam bhumirtisha srotrat tatha lokagum akalpayan.
From his navel emerged the ether, from his head the heavens, the earth from his feet, and the four quarters directions from his ears. Thus have the worlds been organized.
Many may tend to scoff at the description of evolution as given in the Purusha Suktam. But we must remember two things. Firstly, it is poetic and symbolic. And secondly, this description of creation and evolution was given about 4,000 years ago, if not more. In fact, few may be aware that as late as the early part of the 20th century, the astronomers believed that the entire universe consisted only of our galaxy, the Milky Way. But today, we know that there are billions and billions of galaxies. So there is really no need to be condescending about Vedic seers and feel superior to them. Next, and this is an important point, modern physics and cosmology have in broad measure corroborated the point that the evolution of the physical universe is actually a case of the one becoming many. Secondly, sophisticated experiments conducted in the 70s in order to test a contention of Einstein have clearly revealed that there is a mysterious and intangible interconnectivity in the universe. Later, we shall amplify this point, highlighting how even the physical world that all scientists swear by is saying loud and clear that there is a basic underlying unity that is actually tying up everything. What Vedic philosophers assert is that that underlying connecting thread is nothing but God. That exactly is what Lord Krishna also says in the 7th chapter. All this, the forms in the universe, is strung on me as a row of pearls is on a thread.
Vedahametam purusham mahantam aditya varnam tamasastu pare sarvani rupani vichitya dhiraha namani kritva bhivadan yadaste.
It thrills me to have known this Supreme One who magnanimously allowed himself to be sacrificed to aid the creation of the universe and its subsequent evolution, and by doing so he has conferred welfare on all. Embodiment of knowledge, who is effulgent like the sun, the Purusha has, by his intrinsic creative power, created a stage for us to rise above our lower instincts, grow spiritually, and attain immortality.
The best comment to this stanza has been provided by Swami himself. Actually, Swami has made this point several times, for example during the summer course of the year 2000. This is what he said. The rishis of old declared to mankind, "O man, we have seen God." People then asked, "Where did you see this God, inside or outside?" The rishis replied, "God is everywhere, inside as well as outside." They then added, "Man, there is God in you. Verily, you have the effulgence of the sun, but alas, you are engulfed in the darkness of your ignorance, and it is that ignorance that is eclipsing your intrinsic radiance." The rishis saw God everywhere.
Dhata purastadyamuda jahara chakra pravitvan pratishaschadasraha tamevam vidvan namruta iha bhavati nanya pandha ayanaya vidvan.
Those who were among the first to be created knew him and his infinite glory, and having known that, they then proclaimed the same to the entire world. Verily, I say unto all, he who attempts to know the Purusha, the Creator, and his creation will with certainty receive his grace and become one with him forever. In this way, he would be liberated forever and experience eternal bliss. And for those who seek liberation and bliss, there is indeed no other path.
Lord Krishna makes the same point very clear in several places in the Gita. Examples: when thus he perceives that diversity is actually rooted in one, and further has emerged from that one alone, he becomes that very one himself. In him alone, O Bharata, wholeheartedly seek refuge. By his grace thou shalt gain supreme peace and the eternal abode.
Tehanakam mahimanasya chande yatra purve sadhya sandhi deva.
Thus did the devas perform the original mental sacrifice, a key element of which was the offering of Virat himself, the Supreme One, via the subtle sacred fire. And it is from this extraordinary sacrifice of Virata there emerged the basic physical principles and moral laws that govern all aspects of the universe. Great souls of the past all attained immortality only through sacrifice, and sacrifice continues to remain the only available path to immortality to all aspirants of the present as well as the future.
The important point here is the notion of sacrifice, which Swami stresses ever so often. If the future is to be good, then sacrifice is a must. A mother sacrifices so that her children may prosper. If a nation is prosperous today, it is because many others earlier have toiled hard and sacrificed. The Purusha Suktam says that God sacrificed Himself so that we may come into existence.
Adhyasambhoda prithivyerasaccha Vishwakarmanah samavartatadhi Tasyatvashtha vidadat drupamete Tat purushasya vishwamajanamagre.
The universe was created by the Supreme One, also known as Vishwakarman, who at the physical level manifests through elements such as water, earth and fire. In the beginning, there was only liquidity, and from it emerged all else later. Besides, everything was enveloped in gloom and darkness when evolution commenced. Then rose the sun, shedding its brilliance and spreading light. However, this light and splendor of the sun are nothing but tiny aspects of Him, the Purusha.
What you have just heard is the 19th verse. According to scholars, this forms a part of chapter 2 of the Purusha Suktam. There are 5 verses in all in this second chapter, and they are straightforward. We therefore present them without any additional comments.
Vedahametam purusham mahantam adityavarnam tamasah parastat tamevam vidvanamruta iha bhavate nanyapandha vidvanam.
Verily can I proclaim that I know that Supreme One, brighter than 1,000 suns, who lies beyond all ignorance and darkness. Knowing Him thus in this life itself, one goes beyond death to immortality. Indeed, I assert there is no other path to liberation.
Prajapatischaradigarbhe antaha ajayamano bahudha vijayate tasya dhira parijanandi yonim marichinam padamichandi vedasaha.
This Supreme One, also known as Prajapati, because He promotes creation, life and progeny, pervades the entire cosmos in countless different forms. He it is who enters various wombs, emerging as an offspring. At the physical level, He manifests as bodies, both sentient and insentient. And yet far beyond birth and death is He. The wise seek the Creator instead of being deflected by the glitter of creation. And those who seek Him thus do attain Him, even as sage Marichi and several others did earlier.
Yo devebhya atapati, yo devanam purohitaha. Purpoyo devebhyo jataha namo rucha. Brahmaye.
Salutations to you, O Lord, the splendorous and resplendent light of lights, projecting yourself from your unmanifested state. You create all forms and also bless them in all manners possible. Even the devas have to offer their obeisance to you. To you, the ultimate, ultimate, we offer our humble salutations.
Rucham Brahman Janayantaha Deva Agretada Bruvan Yes. Svaivam Brahmano Vidyat Tasya Deva Asanvashe.
At the dawn of creation, the devas, realizing that you indeed are the absolute reality, declared to the one who realizes that you are the supreme, to him even the devas would have to become subservient.
Rishchate lakshmischa patnyo aho ratre pashve nakshatrani rupam ashvinau vyaktam ishtam manishana amum manishana sarvam manishana.
O Lord Supreme, who has modesty and wealth as his consorts, who presides over creation, sustenance and dissolution, whose two sides are the day and the night, whose form is the starry sky, whose mouth sparkles as the twin stars Ashwin, grant me, O Lord, all my earthly desires, but grant me also that which prepares me for the world beyond.
Tachayora Vruni Mahe Gatun Yajnaya Gatun Yajna Pataye Deve Swastirastunaha Swastir Manushe Pyaha Urtham Jigadu Beshajam Channo Tripade Chanchatushpade Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
We pray to and worship the Supreme One for the welfare of all. Free from miseries, may we all sing the glory of sacrifice, Yajna, through which we seek to propitiate the Lord, who is himself the embodiment of sacrifice. May we receive divine protection, and may everyone, everywhere be well and healthy. May medicinal herbs possessing high potency grow in plenty. May all humans and animals too be safe and sound. Finally, may peace prevail at all the three levels of human existence, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual.
Well, that concludes the slow chant. Let us now listen to the Purusha Suktam, chanted at normal speed. For this, we present a recording made in the Mandir.
Sahasra Shri Shavur Shah Sahasra Akshya Sahasra Maha
That concludes the recitation of the verses. We now move to an overview of the Purusha Suktam. What does it convey? What is its bottom line? Does it have any meaning for today's world? These are the issues we shall now consider.